There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Boys, you know what I was thinking last night?
Uh-oh.
Right.
Wouldn't it be fun if we were sisters?
We are kind of sisters if you think about, well, it's a brotherhood. It's the same thing, but we have six balls and three dicks.
No, but we'd go and we'd sit in our little straw beds and we'd braid each other hair and ask questions.
You don't
questions.
Have any hair.
No, I mean, my back has hair.
Okay, we could just do that now and call ourselves brothers.
We sit and talk about it. No, but it's more fun when you're wearing like the long, like kind of night dresses and you sit there and you just like think about wondering if like, will Crispin come back from the war? And then maybe, you know, and maybe Marcus will go, we're like, what's wrong, Marcus? Marcus.
I believe I've come across a bit of the consumption, boys.
Oh, you know, no!
What will I ever do without my sister? Maybe, maybe Father will allow you to wear his war coat just for one moment this Christmas.
Oh, what's that telegram? Dad is dead. Oh, hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to the last podcast on the...
Benjamina.
Yep, sorry. Yep.
Oh, who will I be allowed to marry now?
I don't know. Yeah, Dad died. They said it was a friendly fire. Apparently, he was super annoying. He kept on talking about his daughters.
Oh, no. Dad's friends is going to come to the home and choose each one of us to marry, and we'll be separated.
Well, indeed. Much like the Chihuahua, sometimes separation is good. Okay. By the way, Jerry, he's a Beagle Chihuahua. He's getting more Chihuahua every day, and I say, Chihuahua out! Like an exorcist. Okay. So, although you know what I say about the Chihuahua? The Chihuahua is the salt of dogs. Every dog should have a little Chihuahua, but not too much Chihuahua.
You've hijacked the whole beginning of the show.
Yep. All right, everyone. Well, why is everybody talking about sisters? Because today we are talking about a pair, a duo, a demonic duo. The murderous madness of the twins Erickson.
Ursula and Sabina Erickson were identical Swedish twins who, in 2008, simultaneously lost their minds during a bizarre and mysterious trip to the UK that ended with a case of cold-blooded murder.
Mjolnir. Now, this story has fascinated me for a number of years because there was a documentary that came out in 2011 when I first saw it called Madness in the Fast Lane that was on BBC a bunch of years ago. And you gotta watch it.
Yeah.
But this story is fascinating.
I love that title. Cool.
Now, we may not have known about this story at all had part of the twins' breakdown not been caught on camera during the filming of a UK reality show called Traffic Cops, which is actually a lot more exciting than it sounds.
Really? I would rather watch a documentary called Window Washers or Fart Boys.
My father was a traffic cop, and a lot of traffic cops most of it involves just sitting and watching accidents happen going, that's going to take a lot to clean up.
Wish I wasn't so drunk for today. I didn't know there was going to be an accident.
No, it's traffic. Like, there's car chases. Like, it's kind of like an approximation of real stories of the highway patrol.
Very
like,
cool.
That's what the traffic cops are in UK.
But one of the traffic cops, it seems in the UK, why are all the traffic cops like nanas?
Well,
they look like aunts and aunties. Like, it's a lot of like ladies that you think would make a really nice like sweet bar.
Well, they'll also yell at you if you're driving too fast. I actually think all traffic cops should be no younger than 50 and should all be women. See, that's brave.
Okay.
Well, okay. In the UK, like, I mean, actually, cops are trained in hand-to-hand combat a lot more than they're trained here. I would rather fight an American cop who is unarmed over a cop from the UK any day of the week.
Whoa, weird. That's a very controversial statement because I don't know if... I don't believe in anybody's that dangerous if they call jiu-jitsu jiu-jitsu.
Well, that's true. But thankfully, our officers don't have to use hand-to-hand combat.
They don't have to.
They don't have to.
They have all their weapons from the military.
Yeah, like fat Batmans.
But since the most bizarre part of the breakdown was caught in full by a reality show camera crew, we are all now able to witness the incident as it unfolded that day on the side of a busy motorway near the city of Stoke-on-Kent. It involved delusional proclamations, multiple assaults on police officers,
baka, baka,
and the seemingly impossible survivals of both Erickson twins after they were separately hit by vehicles during the fracas, which were all incidents that the twins themselves set in motion.
You might be wondering, how did we get here?
They walked.
Oh, no kidding.
Then, the day after the incident on the motorway, one of those twins, still obviously suffering from some sort of psychosis, murdered a good Samaritan who was only trying to help.
I tell you what, if he was a good Samaritan, he would have survived.
Well,
technically, he was kind of an average Samaritan because, you know, his skill set wasn't up to par.
Well, I think he sacrificed the most any Samaritan can sacrifice, so I'd say he's a great Samaritan.
Thank you for saving us.
Now, this story is wrapped in multiple mysteries, and the more you learn, the more questions arise. Stripped down to its core, however, this is a story of out-of-control mental illness, but of an entirely different kind than what we've ever covered.
You know, to be honest, I actually think out-of-control mental illness is better than in-control mental illness, because then you get Jeff Bezos. When it's in control, it's very focused and it ruins everything. Out of control, it's kind of like buckshot. So yeah, you're going to get hit a little bit, but as we know from Dick Cheney's friend, you can survive a lot of pellets.
Especially if
Bezos, you don't. Which is just a sniper to your brain.
The big thing about getting a lot of pellets is you also have to be able to keep a secret.
Like, that's
how
true.
You can keep the pellets inside of you. But we are actually really good examples of three people with in-control mental illness, technically.
Yes. Laser focused in control mental illness.
Yeah.
Well, this was not a slow burn of warning signs, ignored diagnoses, and willful ignorance. Rather, this is the story of an explosion fueled by a rare psychiatric syndrome known as folie à deux.
Folie à deux.
Folie à deux, which translates to English as a madness for two.
A madness for two. That's adorable. Oh my God, this is the greatest Valentine's Day of all time. I can't believe you brought me to Alice in Wonderland themed restaurant.
Yes, now it's time to shit our pants and tell the world how Barack Obama's trying to make me menstruate.
Oh my, this is a crazy place.
But it's, you know, double insanity. This is one of the weirdest, like, because it's also, it's kind of pulled out of the left hip pocket by psychiatrists a lot of times trying to figure out why, like, mothers and sisters kill people sporadically.
Sure.
This is one of those, and it's a very specific thing. It kind of does fall down into the world of, like, it's mother-daughters and sister-sister. Which is very interesting, because there would be a great episode of T and Tamara. Of
them, I just love,
like,
that show.
Fucking dirty bathrobes on the street talking about how fucking there are gremlins at the Walmart.
That's a that's the reboot right there.
Now, we're getting to the full story of the Erickson twins here in a bit, but before we do, let's fully explain just how a madness for two works, and we're also going to go into a few other examples of the phenomenon in which criminal activity was the result. Madness for two is a shared psychosis in which delusional belief and sometimes hallucinations are transmitted from one person to another. Usually, this happens when the two sufferers are socially or physically isolated, overly stressed, or, in the case of the twins, extraordinarily close. In fact, from the cases I've seen, madness for two happens almost exclusively in families or in people who are already in familiar relationships, like close friends or marriages.
There's, like, mini cults that are a little bit more intense, because it's not just, like, conscious thought. It's somehow two people or more get together, and then they all begin to either get the delusions downloaded into them by an aggressor, or everybody kind of spontaneously jumps onto the crazy bandwagon together.
Yeah, all right. There's always one person up top. There's always a primary with all of this that for some reason everybody else joins in on. And those other people, like, most of the time have no past history of mental illness in any way whatsoever. They just happen to catch it. It's contagious psychosis.
Interesting.
Now, these delusions can take a couple of different forms. In bizarre delusions, a person might believe something impossible, claiming, for example, that a team of surgeons are sneaking into the room every night to swap out their organs without waking them up.
Well, that would be an amazing team of surgeons, and you would have to imagine they're little mice.
that it would be cuter that way. But I don't think that they don't take into account how difficult it is to schedule a surgery.
Yes.
How difficult it is to actually see a surgeon in any way, shape, or form, especially in America. Just the idea of getting a consultation is very difficult.
What they have just fantasized about is great healthcare. I would love that if you could have everything removed, replaced overnight, and just
boom, wake up.
I didn't even notice.
Then there are non-bizarre delusions, things that are unlikely but still possible. In this case, a person might believe that the FBI is stalking them, even if the FBI has absolutely no reason to pay any attention to this person. But that's still a possibility.
It is a possibility.
Yeah, it depends on what you say on the internet.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But no matter the severity of the delusions, the phenomenon seems to follow a pattern. Usually there is a dominant personality known as the primary who is suffering a delusion of some sort. And there's the submissive personality, the secondary, who's the one who joins in. And once that second person joins in, a feedback loop of delusion begins, which only increases in severity, especially if the people involved are stressed and isolated from others socially or physically.
Also, make sure to check me out. I'm actually, I'm doing a guest spot on Loop of Delusion on OANN.
I love Loop of Delusion. OAN!
Yeah, you should check me out on it. It's great. I'm talking all about how...
Never go near the sewers!
Don't go near the sewers!
Never go near the sewers!
Well, now you've gotten... Wow, this actually did work, because have you seen the Las Vegas sewer map of disappearing people? How it connects right to the sewers? That is 100% true! And that is a great example of how it works, but that is real. Check out the sewer map of Las Vegas.
The sewer map of disappearances is, to me, in the same world as the smiley face murderers, where I don't fully get it, where it's just drownings that happen near smiley face stickers.
It was spray paint. Yeah, it's very freaky.
It's very freaky.
Face killer, by the way, believed to be a cop. Mm.
They mm-hmm. don't know. It doesn't even say. They don't even know if they're connected.
Mm. Okay.
With a fully adieu loop of delusion creates a second feedback loop.
Only a Texan could ruin the French language like that.
God, dude, I got no fucking clue. I've been practicing all week long. Like, I've been practicing. And I listen to the fucking YouTube the pronunciations. I'm like, fully adieu. Like, I don't know how to fucking do it, man. I ain't got the mouth for it. You can do so many accents.
Okay.
Also, do you think that when they were recording, do you think GNR ever had one pedal that they called the Loop of Delusion?
Maybe.
I don't know why I decided to save that Loop of Delusion.
No, I've been very mad at GNR because every time it comes up on my, it's that war, they have a horrible song. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, the second feedback loop, the more the delusions increase into severity, the more stressed the sufferers become, and they become more paranoid, which socially isolates them even more. But sometimes, folie à deux can develop in a pair of seemingly sane human beings who are simply introduced into a stressful, isolating situation. Take, for example, the murder of David Coughlin.
This story fucked up.
Now, full disclosure, I found this story in a Reddit thread about the Erickson sisters in a comment posted by the host of a podcast that, as far as I can tell, no longer exists. But even so, I'd still like to acknowledge that source. Now, in 1999, David Coughlin and his best friend, Rafi Kodikian, mm-hmm. were taking a road trip from Boston to California when they decided to embark on a days-long hike through Rattlesnake Canyon in southern New Mexico near Carlsbad Caverns.
This is sort of like when Nat and I had a little anniversary trip up to Big Bear, and I had this idea of we should hike. And
you had that idea.
Yeah, I was like, because, people hike. I see this all the time. I see pictures of people hiking. I was like, we should do it. So Nat and I were like, okay. And then we went to, like, the hiking place, and we both realized we don't have proper shoes for hiking.
No.
We're wearing Air Maxes. We had no water.
Right.
We had no snacks. Nat's just, like, in her, like, her nice workout gear. I'm just in jeans and shit.
Sure.
And we realized we had nothing to hike with.
No.
Like, we had none of the tools. We had none of the shit.
Literally cut to the bears, hiding behind the bushes, just being like, I hope those two fucking city slickers come into my woods. Ooh, we have lunch for days.
But apparently it takes a lot to hike.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It's super hard to hike.
I didn't know.
Yeah, me and Caroline are, like, experienced hikers, and we still almost died in the Appalachian Mountains.
Don't do that. Don't hike. You just yelled at me for gambling. I spend very little money gambling. And you know what you can't
for gambling?
You know what you can't do in a casino? Die of dehydration. Because all they do is give you drinks.
That's opposite. Is that you are drinking, but you're not getting hydrated.
Something's happening. I'm going to the bathroom a lot.
I also didn't yell at you for gambling at all and didn't even mention your specific gambling in any way whatsoever.
Well, I'm bringing it up.
Boom, 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 boom. Somebody got triggered.
Well, these two guys, after hiking for a few days, they got lost and somewhat dehydrated. They'd only brought 3 pints of water and 1 pint of Gatorade for a days-long hike through the desert, and they'd already used a whole pint of their water to boil hot dogs during their first camp out.
Number one, you're camped out, you cook them over a fire. Number two, you can eat raw hot dogs, they're already cooked. Number three, can't you just drink the hot dog water?
Ugh. They threw it out after they boiled the hot dogs.
Honestly, these what guys are that is wrong. How they did that was wrong.
What do you do when you just
I know that.
You just are going to pour hot dog water out. Doesn't that make coyotes track you?
But I also the
coyotes
idea
coyotes do not attack human beings. They're terrified of us. Yes.
No kidding.
All right.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, now I'm going to go pet one.
Drinking hot dog water, I think I might rather die of dehydration.
I don't know. There are some times when I think about how, like, that's a good like little fat boy thing. Hot dog water popsicles.
Ugh. It's an idea.
Pussy pops.
Why would you call them? Anyway, all right. Yeah, pussy pops, the hot dog flavored popsicle. Get out of the shark tank. Just get, how did you get on the show?
But even though the human body can go 3 to 4 days without water, these two guys panicked the moment their reserves ran out. They started licking rocks, eating cactus fruits, and even started drinking their own urine after only a day. Oh,
they wanted to do that.
I mean, they wanted to. They saw Bear Grylls and they're like, I want that life.
Then when David Coughlin began vomiting the next night, the panic truly set in. Both of them thought that Coughlin was nearing death, so the two hastily entered into a murder pact, followed possibly by a suicide. Coughlin begged his friend to kill him then and there, and Kodikian, in the throes of a madness for two, obliged him by stabbing his best friend twice in the chest. He then buried Coughlin under a pile of rocks and waited to die himself. But when he was found by park rangers not too long after, it was discovered that Kodikian was only moderately to severely dehydrated and nowhere near close to death. In fact, Kodikian had buried his friend using rocks weighing up to 70 pounds, which would have been impossible for someone on death's door.
Oh, God, I'm just so thirsty. I'm so thirsty. God, I'm so thirsty. You know what I need?
Yeah.
I need a quick pump. Let me get my
25. Yeah.
1, 2, 3. Four,
oh,
five,
yeah.
Six,
you are thirsty.
Eight.
I'm getting thirsty, too, speaking of that.
Oh, wait a second. I need a little pump. Let me get my little. I got my. I brought my weight machine with me.
Oh,
the big flying machine.
I'm getting thirsty.
1, 2. It's all about lightweight. You want to do lightweight? A lot of reps.
Yeah.
Eight, tone.
Yeah.
So thirsty.
Well, as far as David Coughlin went, while he was dehydrated when he died, it wasn't anywhere near fatal. As it turned out, Coughlin had vomited not from severe dehydration, but rather because the unripe cactus fruit he'd eaten hadn't agreed with his stomach.
Mm.
The two men had merely fallen into a madness for two, and their paranoia resulted in an entirely unnecessary, yet still requested, mercy killing. Kodikian pled guilty to second-degree murder, and the court, thankfully recognizing the extenuating circumstances, sentenced him to a 2-year sentence and 5 years probation.
And a lifetime supply of Pedialyte. Now, this is actually kind of nice of the jury to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as John Coughlin's family went, they released a statement saying that even though they had questions, they did not believe that Rafi Kodikian acted with malicious intent when he killed their son.
They were very, very close friends. And so at the time, there's something about being isolated that adds to it. And their fear, like there was something about, because neither one of them, it seemed from my research, had a history of mental illness in any way, shape, or form. It sounds like they just went out to the desert and the freak out was so intense and so quick that they just lost all bearing of reality.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes a folie à deux can become a folie à trois or quatre, or even a folie en famille.
Oh, yeah, I remember that scene in JFK. Oliver Stone, JFK, remember that? Really, really hot. Folie à quatre.
Do you remember when John Candy was having all the ass sex?
John Candy was not in that scene. That was that not John Candy. I don't know how many times I have to tell you two fuckers that John Candy was not in the orgy scene.
Get the net.
83 more times to get the net. 83 more times to tell us. But that's that Mandela effect.
Who's getting made love to in that?
It's Tommy Lee Jones and Kevin Bacon. Those were the one. They were the ones in the orgy scene.
Kevin
dressed
Bacon
up as two British pops.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon has got a hog. By the way, I think that's why his last name is Bacon.
You see his? Oh yeah, he's got a huge dick.
Huge dick. Or is he just very tiny? We could talk about this all day.
And well, jacked.
Yes.
Well, the madness of families was the case with the Tromp family in Australia just 4 years ago. With the Tromps, the madness began with the patriarch, Mark Tromp, aged 51. Tromp and his wife Jacoba ran a successful berry farm on the outskirts of Melbourne with their three adult children, all in their 20s.
Oh my goodness.
And all was going well until Mark began suffering from stress and paranoia.
I can't imagine just how much pressure there is in the world of berries.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, you imagine you go out there to the fields
trying to build homes out of your wares. You got all of the mischievous orphans running from the chain gang to go steal berries to eat from. You got the magic rabbits living down in the burrows underneath. That's just got to mean all these people coming from. And then never mind the Jews.
Well, I don't know what that means, but I was picturing a field full of dudes named Barry. Isn't that kind of funny too if you think about it like that?
Well, Mark Tromp had convinced himself that someone was going to come and kill the entire family on their farm for the simple purpose of stealing their money. And his personal psychosis soon spread to his wife and eventually two of their three children. It was a highly successful berry farm.
It sounds like they were worried that the Berenstain Bears were going to come and eat all their food and then live in their house.
They did think that, honestly. But that's where madness to me becomes truly, like, scary, obviously, when it's something that cartoonish. Because they started to believe that people
were going
to...
believe that the Berenstain Bears were coming.
No, but it's like, it's along those lines. They thought that other families from other farms were going to run from their homes and attack them within their own homes for their berries. Okay. They thought their berries were in danger, and then it became like the scene in The Jerk when all the cans start exploding. It's like, we got to get away from the cans. Like, they realize this is a berry-centered problem. We are up to our fucking eyebrows in berries, and we got to get away from them.
Well, it would be kind of fun if there was a peanut farm nearby and then there was a big tornado and the berries got picked up with the peanuts and then it created a jelly and a peanut butter mix and then that could go in and be a great kind of a mixture if you think about a commercial.
That is just a commercial. You just picture a commercial. What was that commercial with the peanut butter and the jelly in the same jar?
Yeah, it's Squeezables. I never bought it.
Hmm. Glad we got to this point.
Never bought it. Peak of human laziness.
That's a Brian Regan bit.
Yeah.
Well, one night, very suddenly, the Tromps loaded into their car with their adult children in a panic and fled their farm, leaving behind passports, credit cards, and cell phones in an attempt to go off the grid. Apparently, according to Mark Tromp, the attack was imminent. The only one who brought their phone was middle child Mitchell, who is the only member of the five-person family who had not succumbed to the madness. And he'd only gone on the trip to make sure everyone else was okay.
It's always like like the Munsters had the normal child.
Yeah.
It's the same thing where it's just like one not crazy child who's just being like, I'm just going to go ahead and bring my phone. Okay, because it just seems like, I mean, obviously this is kind of fun. I haven't seen mom and dad this passionate in a long time. I actually kind of like saw them kiss on the mouth for the first time in like a year, and they're kind of talking, so maybe there's something about this family that is like making everybody like come together like it's a Christmas miracle.
Sure.
So I'll ride with it for a while.
But the Tromps only made it about 20 miles from home before the whole family was screaming at Mitchell to throw his cell phone out the window because they were convinced someone was using it to track them.
Well, that probably was happening, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, we don't need to have chips in the vaccines. You have a phone.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
Well, all throughout that night, the Tromps drove almost 500 miles to escape their imaginary pursuers. But at 7 a.m. the next day, Mitchell decided he couldn't take it anymore, and he separated from the group, taking multiple trains to get back home.
Have you ever been a part of a family vacation so bad that you could just imagine just being like, I'm just getting on the fucking bus. This is done. Just like, I don't want to be in Orlando anymore.
Well,
I know I'm 12, and I'm not really certain how the rail system works, but I'm out because Dad just fucking, he pushed me in front of Aladdin. Yeah. You know what I mean? That happened one year in Orlando. He pushed me in front of Orlando. I know, pushed me in front of Orlando, of Aladdin.
Well, why?
Because he said that I should have been trying harder to get an autograph.
From Aladdin?
Oh, yes. He pushed you towards Aladdin.
Yes.
Okay, does he know that that's not different from pushing you in front of Aladdin. He's pushing you towards Aladdin.
But Aladdin was there.
Right.
And I had to be embarrassed in front of technically the coolest rogue in the Disney catalog.
Wow. That's a strange autograph to get.
Yeah, that's weird. So did people do that at Disney parks? They ask for autographs from the characters?
Of course. And the other phenomena that I don't like is when they say, like, kiss Mickey and tell him that you love him. Tell him you love him. And then you have to, like, kiss some, like, weird, God knows what's inside the cat.
God his knows. Costume. Who knows?
Like, I love you. And you hear, like, muffle, like, roll over to. I love you.
Well, later that morning, after Mitchell left, his two sisters peeled off from the group as well at a tourist spot called the Jenolan Caves. They escaped the situation by stealing a car, and they went and filed a missing persons report on their parents. After making the report, the sisters separated as well. One drove the stolen car back home, while the other, still under the spell of Folie à Femille, climbed into the bed of a truck where she wasn't discovered until the driver had traveled for almost an hour.
That is so scary.
It's really scary. And this is one of these things about this syndrome that I find interesting, is that for some reason, it makes people scatter.
Yeah.
Like, there's it's at weird. Some point in the illness, they or whatever the I want to say scenario, like, I don't know how to describe it, like an episode, people just become like rabbits and start running in various directions, which we'll see with the Erikson twins very famously. But this happens in all of these stories where they go into plans like it's a bunch of meth heads doing a bunch of weird afternoon activities.
Well, if they scattered like a bunch of rabbits, they would hop, Henry. You fucking idiot! You fucking idiot!
I will fucking hit you in the head with a crowbar.
They would hop if they scattered like rabbits.
You
moron!
Sleep so fucking deep, I could kill you. No one even know. And they wouldn't even suspect me.
Rabbits.
Well, not only do they scatter, but sometimes when they're separated, they go catatonic. Because that's what happened with this girl. The girl who was in the back of the truck, in the bed of the truck. When she was found, she was unable to say even her own name. It took months in a mental hospital for her to regain her faculties. It broke her.
Wow.
Now, it's at this point that the media got involved. Once Mitchell Tromp went on TV asking for help, officials began an interstate search for his obviously mentally ill parents, who by this point had gone from a madness of family to madness for two.
Oh my
romantic
goodness.
You're getting the swerve back.
It is kind of nice, and I'm very happy that truck driver who found that catatonic woman in the back of his truck wasn't like the nefarious star of the movie Overboard, who took that woman and made her the mother of his children. Do you remember that movie Overboard?
Yeah,
she
Overboard.
Goes overboard.
Oh yeah,
that movie
right.
is about kidnapping.
Oh wow. It is a sinister movie.
It really is.
But on Wednesday, Jacoba and Mark separated in a town called Wangaratta.
We're all stopping in Wangaratta. We are always stopping in Wangaratta.
I want to assure you.
Well, Jacoba was found the next day over 200 miles away, agitated and wandering about. But Mark had stayed in town. For 6 days, Mark hid out, possibly breaking into various businesses around town, until he was finally found on the side of the road near Wangaratta Airport. When police drove him away, he defiantly flipped the bird to nearby photographers, because at this point, the Tromp family's misadventure had become a national obsession.
Well, I remember I read the story when it first came out. And because it was before we were doing side stories, but it would have definitely been a side story. But I remember reading it and at first not fully understanding, but I had known about the Erikson twins and the first seeing like this idea of like, daddy's crazy. And I wonder in a way as a family, like if daddy goes crazy, almost like survival instinct would make you kind of go crazy too, because if daddy's crazy and no one else is crazy, that's how we get like a DeSalvo, even though that's technically like the son is crazy, no one else is crazy, but that's like how you get a family annihilator.
Later, however, Mark Tromp fully and publicly admitted that he just had a massive meltdown. Wow. And he just said, sorry, I'm sorry.
If I see one more jar of jelly, if I see one more berry.
I just got to get out there and I got to say I'm sorry. I overreacted. I obviously should have worked out some kind of treaty with the magical rabbits in my berry farm in order to give them some so they could leave some of the extra berries alone. I should have done some of that. And I definitely should have had a negotiation with the Jews.
Yeah, that is, it does seem like you've been going on some websites, which perhaps has led to your mental breakdown as well.
Well, all of this had come from a buildup of normal, everyday stressors, and these stressors had settled into a madness for family feedback loop. Now, the stories of the Tromps and David Coughlin involved close friends and spouses, but some of the most intense episodes of Folie à Deux occurs in twins. Ooh. This was certainly the case with the Gibbon sisters of Wales, also known as the Silent Twins. Identical in both appearance and behavior, June and Jennifer Gibbons were born in 1963 to immigrant parents from Barbados who had settled in the United Kingdom. Now, it was obvious that there was something different about the girls from the very beginning. When they began speaking, they communicated in a cold, metallic tone using a language that was indecipherable to anyone but them.
That's why it'd be cool if we were three identical twins. We all shared the same belly, and we shared the same food for mommy, and then when we came out, we all could have, like, our own secret.
I think you mean you want to be conjoined.
No, I never want to experience your day-to-day.
Well, how would we share the same belly, then?
No, we'd be inside it, because we were triplets.
Oh, you want to be inside of a belly with Marcus and myself
swimming swimming and eating so underneath mommy's boobies.
This year has been hard on everybody. This has been a hard year for a lot of people.
I just need to use my imagination in different ways.
Yeah, you definitely do.
Well, concerning the speech of the Gibbons twins, when a speech therapist recorded what was being said and slowed it down considerably, it was discovered that they were actually speaking Bajan Creole extraordinarily fast, faster than anyone but them could process.
Think about how crazy that is to, like, sit with the twins and record them speaking, and then it's just like them going, like very intense, metallic, like you can't understand. And then they just put it on the radio and they slow it down. They're like, you want some bread? I'll take some bread. And you're like, that's so weird.
Bullied for being both strange and for being the only black children in their small Welsh town, Jennifer and June began speaking to nobody but each other. And if communication was necessary, they'd write notes. But their madness of two seems to be extraordinarily long term. It was theorized that Jennifer, seemingly the less intelligent of the two, controlled June through subtle facial tics and body language, making Jennifer the primary.
Wow, that's cool. That's what we have to wonder. Master Blaster, was Blaster not in charge of Master? We just will never know.
I think that is what they're saying.
Yeah.
These twins also defined codependency. This is another story of catatonia. When their parents tried separating them by sending the girls to different boarding schools, they both went completely catatonic and seemed not only unwilling, but unable to communicate until they were reunited.
And I think this you'll see a stripe of this in the Erickson twins story as well, where there's something about pulling them apart either makes them go catatonic or something, like it kind of breaks the spell for a little bit. Something happens and then they come back together. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Once back together, the Gibbon sisters began writing novels set in a bizarre, almost dystopian version of 1950s America. One novel was Pepsi Cola Addict, which was about a teenager who drank 300 cans of Pepsi a day while improbably living in a tenement house in Malibu.
Right, that's called a TikTok influencer.
Absolutely.
But this is actually an incredible, I mean, I love that concept.
Yeah.
And how was the novel?
Oh, it's very difficult to read. Very, very few copies exist of it. It's scattered. All of their novels were scattered. They wrote dozens of novels, plays, thousands of pages of diaries.
A spectrum. Let's just do. Let's do Dianetics and David Icke on the spectrum of David Icke's the greatest.
David Icke surprisingly is very.
It is not easy to read. The greatest answer, or whatever.
But it has a flow. Dianetics is a con man tapping,
like eat as fast as humanly possible. So that's my that's more of like an improv lecture. That's what I would call that.
So this is closer to Dianetics.
It's fiction. I mean, this is 100% fiction.
This is closer to the Battlefield Earth.
Oh. Yeah.
Which also I want to read, but it's got a flow. And it's about leverage.
I know it is.
Well, the Gibbons, I mean, they had some cool ideas. They had another novel called The Pugilist. That was about a physician who kills the family dog for its heart so he can transplant the organ into his child. Except the dog's spirit survives the operation and the child dog kills the father in revenge.
That's fucking awesome.
No, that's the shaggy dog.
Yeah, man, that's
it's
a good reboot.
It's the shaggy dog with a murder at the end.
That's fucking killer.
I'm just saying that's not that unique of an idea.
No, I'm not saying it's unique. I'm saying it's great.
But when the literary world ignored the Gibbons sisters, and when they self-published Pepsi-Cola Addict through a vanity press to no acclaim, the then teenage twins turned to rapidly escalating juvenile delinquency.
Cool.
It began with shoplifting, drinking, and sniffing glue.
Oh, yeah.
But that
the trifecta of cool.
Yeah. But that soon graduated to breaking and entering, and eventually the attempted arson of a public building. After being arrested, however, they were grossly over-sentenced to an indefinite stay at the infamous Broadmoor Criminal Lunatic Asylum.
Yeah, they didn't need that. That you didn't need to do that to them.
They could call it something nicer.
Well, the Gibbons sisters did not deserve to be in there. Listen to some of the people that they shared grounds with. During their 10 years at Broadmoor, they were there with Peter Sutcliffe. They were there with psychopathic gang leader Ronnie Cray. Mm. And they were there with Charles Bronson, a.k.a. Britain's most violent prisoner.
Yeah, it sounds like they really needed kind of like an art sponsor. More than anything, I feel like they could have been like a Basquiat. They could have been used. They could have not. I mean, used. That's what you could say that what happened vaguely with Basquiat. But you could also they could have been supported and have been encouraged to write and do things.
They needed a patron.
Yes.
I'm at this level of quarantine where I've been taking self quizzes, mostly BuzzFeed, but also some like what serial killer would you be based on your sign? And apparently I'm Carl Panzeram. He's Cancer. He's a Cancer. Very emotional, very smart, but also don't cross him.
I don't know what to do with you.
That's what I was. They called me Carl Panzeram in the survey.
You're the hugest ant to ever live.
I found out what Christmas movie I am. Home Alone.
You are Home Alone.
That's what BuzzFeed said.
I can see that.
I can see that. And I can see you booby trapping your home for no one.
Carl Panzeram stars in Home Alone, and I'm Carl Panzeram.
This is becoming a last podcast fan fiction.
I love it.
Well, even besides the people who are actually there with the Gibbons sisters, there was also Robert Maudsley, who 5 years previous to their arrival had killed a child molester in Broadmoor with a fellow patient named David Cheeseman by shoving a spoon into the molester's ear after 9 hours of torture.
That's when he... That fucking sounds like Arkham Asylum. Woo! And Cheeseman is just fucking treat the dude. He's just like, as soft as a wheel of brie, I will steep my mighty spoon into your cheese brain.
I love the cheese puns, cheese man.
In other words, Broadmoor probably wasn't the best place for a couple of girls who'd broken into a few buildings and set a few things on fire.
No.
It was, however, obvious that their crimes and their isolation had been escalating, egged on by Jennifer, who is said to be the evil twin.
Ooh.
After 10 years in Broadmoor, though, just as the twins were about to be moved to a lower security facility, Jennifer died of a sudden inflammation of the heart at the age of 29. Apparently, the twins had decided that for one to live freely, the other had to die.
Uh-oh.
But to this day, no one knows how that inflammation of the heart occurred. Jennifer had agreed to die, but no drugs were present in the corpse, there was no sign of foul play, and she had no history of cardiac problems. And this is not something that happened in like 1895. I think this was 1993.
This is like when your Mimu and Papu die within like 2 days of each other.
Like Johnny Cash did not die right after June, but close after.
It was a few months. Yeah. It was less than 6 months, I think.
I also found out when I was doing my searches that you can actually die of a broken heart. Because
Are you the saddest man that has ever lived?
No,
did you sit
I
alone
out with
in your
dog.
House and typing, can you die
yes.
of a broken heart
yes,
into
that's
Google?
How I know this. And it actually tears the tissue.
You fuck. And it's folklore.
No, it's actually real. No, it's actually real. You truly can die of a broken heart.
Well, sure enough, after Jennifer Gibbons died, June, long thought to be the secondary, began speaking and continues to live a relatively normal, if supervised, life in Wales.
Wow.
27 years after her sister mysteriously set her free. Now, that story has somewhat of a happy ending, or at the very least, nobody died that didn't want to die. But the same cannot be said of our main subjects today, Ursula and Sabina Erickson.
Now, Ursula and Sabina already sounds like fucking trouble.
I love those. I honestly love the name Ursula and Sabina. I love those names.
Yeah. Ursula and Sabina were identical twins born in a small town in Sweden in 1967. Raised with an older sister named Mona and an older brother named Bjorn, little is known about their childhood other than the fact that they had no mental health issues or any run-ins with the law.
I bought a book that I thought was going to, because Ursula and Sabina Erickson's story, this story has like a couple of, I finally found like the conspiracy theory vein that I thought was going to talk about like MK Ultra and that they were Manchurian candidates, and it doesn't. It's the worst, it's one of the worst books I've ever purchased. It's called The Madness Shared by Two, written by David Kahn, who was a private investigator who wanted to get into the things that were a little fishy about this story, which turns out the only thing that was fishy was the fact that Ursula and Sabina were a little weird and did things a little differently, as we'll discover. And that's when he couldn't get it. He couldn't understand that anybody could be weird enough to do any of the things that they did. But the one tidbit that I gleaned from the book was about them as teenagers, that he doesn't know if it's rumor or not, but that Ursula and Sabina.
It's not a tidbit, it's just rumor.
We'll find out.
It's a tidbit, though.
It's a tidbit. But he's one story from someone who grew up with them was that Ursula and Sabina were known as, like, kind of a terrible twosome in high school, and that they would, like, bully people, and that Sabina was, like, a super punk, like, had the crazy hair before anybody else did in town, and it was just, like, them just, like, chain smoking and calling people fat. I was like, that's kind of fun. I like those girls.
And Sabina, don't cross them. I wouldn't mess with them.
No.
So they were just mean. But of course, this is also the type of guy that, you know, hears that and is like, so you knew that they had a future of criminality ahead.
Exactly.
This is also the same guy who wrote a book called Immigration, Immigration, Immigration.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not a cry of love for immigration. You know what I mean? He's not like so excited it's happening.
No, ironically, it's all about foreign policy. Very strange. Oh, wow. Very strange title. So that's an anti-book recommendation.
Oh, yeah, yes. Dude. Wow. So hours of my life wasted.
Very rare.
Nothing to help in the episode.
I don't think we've ever done that before. Very rare.
Oh, no, it happens quite often.
Well, you usually don't scream about it.
No, sometimes I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, in the year 2000, both sisters decided to leave Sweden for separate destinations. Ursula came here to the United States, while Sabina moved to County Cork in Ireland. And whilst in Ireland, she met a partner and had two children. Now, the two sisters stayed in touch through social media and would speak to each other on the phone at least once a day, but they went years without seeing each other in person. But that all changed on May 18th, 2008, when the two sisters were in their late 30s.
I look for so much information on this period of their lives, and I couldn't find jack shit, which is the ultimate thing about Fidel is that the madness is private. It really this, like, it becomes the separate little bubble. That's why it feels like a two-person cult. Like, they kind of came back together after not seeing for years. And what everybody said was that they then became inseparable, where they were, like, almost scared to leave each other.
Yeah. But, of course, that was only for one day, because this shit got out of hand at a spectacularly fast pace.
Damn.
For reasons unknown to anybody. And the other thing, the reason why we don't know a whole lot about Ursula and Sabina is because they're both extraordinarily private people. Never spoken about any of this.
Sabina will refuse to speak about any of this. It was no comment. We have no clue what their interior thoughts were, which is, it's kind of interesting how many times you'll see, and we talk about on the show all the time, about how the only way we know the inner lives, a lot of the perpetrators of these crimes, is because they talk after the fact.
Right.
And then we find out whether or not, then we kind of have to adjudicate whether or not they're full of shit,
right,
or they're building their myth, or they actually telling the truth.
I think it's kind of refreshing that she doesn't want to talk. It's kind of nice, actually.
Now, it's argued that the primary in this case of madness for two was Ursula. At the time, she suffered from a rare psychiatric disorder in which she could hear voices but couldn't understand what they were saying.
Ah, yes, like when you're in the McDonald's drive-thru. No, I want to eat McChicken? McChicken? I want the Travis Scott meal. You're a duck.
Can you order the Travis Scott meal?
Yeah, it's not. What do you mean? We're not in North Korea. It's not plastic food. I mean, it is plastic.
You just call it the Travis Scott meal?
That's what it's called, the Travis Scott meal.
Oh, I don't know.
It's like the Michael Jordan meal they had back in the early 90s.
Mm.
Now, this is just speculation on my part, but I think it's possible that the two sisters began interpreting these voices together, creating a bizarre fantasy world in which they were being pursued by persons and for reasons unknown.
I do believe that Sabina might have had some drug use in the past. It sounds like she might have been into some shit when she was living in Ireland, but I don't think that excuses, because they said
have drug use.
But
did the
guy who wrote the book, was he the one that said that?
No, I saw a couple of things, because they're wondering how they go fucking so crazy so fast.
Well, that was the great chapter in that book. It was all about how immigration is bringing drugs into our twins.
our twins. But I wonder, you know, it just seems that there something was happening. Something must have spurred something that kind of became conspiratorial very fast. I don't know. Maybe
something
I'm
must have happened.
Well, remember, they talked on the phone to each other almost every single day. So if there was something going on, if there was some sort of buildup, then it very well could have started in those daily conversations. And remember, in the case of David Coughlin, that happened within a matter of days. And they were still pretty close. And, you know, and in the matter of the Tromps as well, like, that was also something that escalated pretty quickly. So if they hadn't spoken to each other in years, then, you know, maybe there would be other factors at play here.
Extenuating circumstances.
The extenuating circumstance. But I think because they talked with each other on the phone every day, I think the phone conversations actually led to the visit, which led to the madness.
Okay.
Now, once Ursula showed up in Ireland, the twins refused to leave each other's side. And from reports, Sabina and her husband got into an argument the first night Ursula was there, although we don't know what the argument was about. What we do know is that after the argument, Sabina clandestinely packed a bag for a trip, and the two sisters left the house in the middle of the night without telling Sabina's husband or her two children where they were going.
Well, Sabina's husband did say the line, and you guys can infer what it means. It doesn't matter that you're sisters. Who cares? Just pretend you guys are friends, and we can go into the room. And it doesn't. No one cares. It doesn't matter. I've seen it on video. Remember the Barbie twins? They were super hot. They were twins, right? It doesn't matter.
Just listen to me, babe. You guys are Swedish.
Right? It's like you guys are one person.
Sisters kiss in Sweden every day.
Kisters, baby.
Kisters.
Well, as it turned out, the sisters had taken the overnight ferry to Liverpool and had arrived on the shores of England at 8:30 a.m. the day after Ursula arrived back in the British Isles. Within less than 24 hours, the madness for two had taken a hold in both sisters.
It must have been the plan that they were going to do this. But they also then didn't have a lot of a plan, because then they showed up and then they just wandered around for about 36 hours.
I don't know if they had a plan or if there was something, because that's the thing about this whole case is that, like, with every single little thing that they do, you kind of have to question what is their motivation behind that. But you also have to remember that they're both suffering from bizarre delusions. So there really is no logic to anything that they're doing. There's an internal logic that makes sense to the two of them. But, you know, internal logic on bizarre delusions is fucking indecipherable.
But that's the only reason why, that's the only thing I mean as a plan, is that they had some harebrained scheme that this is how it's going to go down. And we're going to talk a little bit about what they thought in a second.
Now, upon exiting the ferry, the sisters immediately went to a police station and reported that Sabina's children back in Ireland were in danger, but wouldn't say why they'd traveled out of Ireland to report the crime, nor would they say what the danger was.
One interesting thing that came from the book was apparently when they were in the lobby for the police, when they were waiting to hear them, like they went, they filed their report because, number one, it was weird because the cops were like, why didn't you file this report in Ireland where you live?
Right.
Why did you come to another country to report this? And so while they sat and they were kind of figuring that shit out, somebody walked into the lobby while they were waiting and Sabina had a full on fucking meltdown. Like they did a full like weird twin meltdown at this random person that walked in that
crab people.
They start this thing of that they're being hunted.
Wow. Once the police left the women alone to conduct actual investigations, Sabina and Ursula snuck out of the police station and boarded a bus heading from Liverpool to London at 11:30 a.m. again for reasons unknown. Now, once the twins got on the bus, the other passengers noticed that something was a bit off. Both sisters were nervous and both clutched their bags as if their lives depended on it, refusing to stow them in the luggage compartment overhead for any reason.
I don't know if these are like an American Greyhound, but do you have any idea how messed up you have to be noticeably strange on a bus?
On a bus?
Because you have people with like the, like holding a puppet that is their mother's head.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah,
you
yeah.
just have so many different folks.
I thought a bus driver's job was to be both blind and able to only see the road.
Yeah, Ben, do you remember when we took that Greyhound bus from New York down to Washington, D.C., and the woman behind us spent the entire trip practicing what she was going to say to Hillary Clinton once she got there?
Wow. Well, she had a lot to say.
She's right there. You know what I mean? She's not in the White House, but she might be somewhere in Washington, D.C.
Oh, man.
Well, the bus driver noticed the erratic behavior as well, and when he pulled over at one of those charming British motorway rest stops, he told the twins that he'd have to search their bags for illegal items if they wanted to continue the journey. The twins naturally refused, so the bus driver left them behind. On his way out, though, he informed the manager of the service station that there were two identical twins out in the parking lot acting suspiciously, erratically, and quite possibly criminally.
Well, they were so...
But you're the manager of this service station. Don't you just want to be like, then get them the fuck out of here?
No, you just
remember
drop
that
them.
When they were on your bus and you just dropped them off in my rest station?
No, they always have one new cop there that's like waiting and he's got to come up and be like, all right then, let's get a little bit of four. What's going on here? All right, then. But the two girls were in... They were dressed... It's not suspiciously. They look like... Kind of like soccer moms,
yeah.
But like all zipped up, like very small, like soccer mom, like visors, but pulled real low.
Soccer and moms on the run.
The fucking big olds, the big like kind of like parkas zipped all the way up to the top of their throats. And then they're holding their bags above their breasts. Like if you see it, the CCTV footage of them just like scurrying around like. They look like cartoon burglars.
Well, once the bus was gone, the manager took a look for herself and saw the twins clutching their bags to their chest while having an intense conversation. Manager said that she couldn't hear the content, but it looked to her like they were plotting something.
She wanted them to be plotting something because then she could be an action hero.
Well, not wanting to risk the possibility of some bizarre terrorist attack, the manager called the police. But when officials arrived and spoke with the sisters, they said the Ericssons seemed normal, even happy.
Which we see evidence of in the documentary where they kind of flip. All of a sudden, they're just like, oh, they're just like normal ladies. And they're just joking and talking like everything's cool.
So how much of that psychosis is taking over? Because it seems like if they can flip from normal to plotting, then they must be aware.
It's what they're aware of is their paranoia. They're aware that somebody is out to get them. So what they're doing is they are changing their behavior in order to continue the delusion. They are lost in a delusion. So if they speak to a cop, then
they're
going to act like nothing's wrong because they have to get away.
Also, they are now folding the cops into their delusion and saying that they are now also being persecuted by people. In, again, not cops, humans in cop uniforms. That's like a hook that becomes thing. I mean, like, oh, you're just wearing a uniform. That doesn't make you a cop. Like, you get into this whole world where, like, you're actually right, and then blows my mind semantically. You're like, oh, fuck, yeah, the object is not its name.
Well, but I do, you know, uniforms do matter. If I see a pilot and he's not a real pilot and he's in pilot clothes, then it's scary if he's not a real pilot.
It is very scary.
Yeah.
Well, because they were happy and nice, the cops just gave him a phone number for the bus company so they could be collected by the next coach to London. Now, later, the sister's older brother, Bjorn, would say that his sisters were running away from quote-unquote maniacs, but nobody has been able to spot anyone approaching them or following them on any of the CCTV footage captured that day.
This was the center of their hallucination, is that they believed that they were being attacked, essentially, and stalked by groups of people that were looking to sexually assault them. They thought that there was, and they thought that they were running from place to place, and this essentially it's very targeted individual talk, because they thought a whole community of people were trying to kill them.
Interesting.
But spurred on by the delusion that their brother weakly defends, the Erickson twins inexplicably took off on foot down the median of the M6 motorway. And that's when the chaos truly began. Now, in the UK, it's illegal to walk down the center median of a motorway. So when a CCTV operator saw two women walking between two busy multi-lane roads in the middle of heavy afternoon traffic, he called the police. But before the police even showed up, Sabina and Ursula, for some reason, decided to cross three lanes of heavy motorway traffic from the median to the shoulder. And on the way, Sabina was grazed by a compact car traveling about 50 miles an hour and suffered minor injuries, but otherwise they got across okay.
It was like the school in stunt woman acting, because she rolled away from it, but she just like, I don't know how to describe it. They casually step into oncoming traffic they are just crossing the street. They do look like hurried, like as they are looking, because we watch that CCTV footage. You see them like kind of looking around and shit, and obviously, but then they just kind of make the left and walk into traffic.
I do love this new psychological breakdown of the game Frogger. And I can't wait for them to come out with Crazy Frogger. Why is he doing what he does?
Now, the car that got the call from dispatch that day just so happened to be shadowed by a camera crew filming an episode of Traffic Cops. And it's for this reason that we know exactly how this whole conflict went down.
Do you think of traffic cops, when they are bored, they go to like some kind of like crumpet store?
Probably. I'm sure that they do.
Crumpets suck.
Crumpets aren't bad.
You ever had one?
Yeah.
When have you had a crumpet?
When I went to get the crumpet at the crumpet stop. I'm sure I've had a crumpet. I don't know.
They're dry and they suck.
Okay. Now I don't have enough evidence to make my argument, so fine.
I've been going and buying a bunch of meat pies at Miles of Kiswick here in New York City. It's a wonderful British food store.
Wow. Is he the only one?
Yeah.
Yeah, but because there's also Italian food, Chinese food, Thai like, food.
There's just so much cuisine. Every other cuisine.
Yeah.
Well, when police arrived to where the sisters were located, Ursula and Sabina were calmly standing on the shoulder smoking cigarettes. So the cops didn't really think that this was going to be that big of a deal. But what happened next points even stronger to the possibility that Ursula was indeed the primary sufferer of delusion here, and that Sabina was the secondary, merely following her sister's fantasy. See, when the cops arrived, the sisters were pretty affable, just chatting and smoking. In fact, Sabina in particular seemed particularly harmless while wearing a yellow visor that appropriately said, "Time to believe."
And it's really strange. In the documentary, they really are just, because they have the footage from the episode of Traffic Cops, and they're just hanging out. It's real normal, just talking to the police, no problems.
But very suddenly, and without warning, Ursula bolted straight into oncoming traffic. The officer speaking to her tried grabbing a hold of her jacket, but Ursula wrenched herself free and dove straight under the back wheels of a moving semi. Seconds later, Sabina, mirroring her sister perfectly, did the exact same thing and was almost immediately struck by a Volkswagen Polo going about 40 miles an hour. She smashed into the windshield, put a large dent where the windshield met the roof, and fell limply to the asphalt.
Oh my God.
And the cops immediately sprung into action and found that while Sabina was unconscious, Ursula was somehow not only still alive after going under the wheels of a semi, she was actually speaking. Miraculously, the semi had only crushed her legs. But when police tried helping her, all she would do was spit and scream at anyone offering assistance, telling them that she recognized them all and that none of them were real.
Been there.
Yeah, we've all been there. Jeez.
It's hard, man, when you are dealing, because they're desperately trying to help these women.
Yeah,
and
right.
Because Ursula's trying to get up, and she
with
has
two broken legs.
Her legs are now, they are baked ziti. They are no longer legs. And she's trying to, like, get up like it's no problem. And they're just pushing her down. And eventually, like, kind of like, you know, they're desperately trying to help her. But they're also, like, just having to, like, pin her to the asphalt.
Right.
Like, as she's struggling.
And they're constantly trying to cover in those foil blankets, those foil fold-out blankets. They're just trying to cover in this thing over and over again. And she's just not having any of it.
You got to sell it like she's a baked potato.
You're a potato! Have fun with it!
While she was completely broken from the waist down, she was nearly animalistic from the waist up, clawing at any officer who came near her while calling them either fucking assholes or bitch asses. Nice. Bitch ass was her particular favorite.
I kind of like that, though.
It's one of those, like, if you're Swedish and then you kind of get into, like, one American phrase.
Yeah.
You're just like, I like this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this wasn't anywhere near the end of it. 15 minutes later, Sabina came to, and even though she had just been hit by a car, she seemed completely unfazed and continued mirroring Ursula's behavior.
She just popped up.
What?
She just got up. Like, I have no... She took a full-on hit from a car. She rolled over the hood,
right.
And then she gets up, and she's fucking going into boxing stance. She starts, like, moving her feet. They're trying to surround her and shit. I mean, she's just like, can't hold me. Can't catch me, stealing pigs.
They were totally sober. No drugs in the system.
We'll get into that in a second. Well, a female officer tried calming Sabine, but she started...
Auntie Nanu. Yeah.
But she started screaming about how they were all trying to steal her organs.
Trying to steal my organs?
Oh, don't do that.
She then stood up, punched an officer, and ran into moving traffic on the other side of the motorway, yelling about how the police weren't real.
Whoa! Ain't none of y'all real, dude.
Oh my goodness.
She fucking keyed into the secret, man. We're all fucking constructs, dude.
Just...
But she, the shot that she gave that cop looked like she must have taken a boxing class or something, because the cop was there like, all right, let's get all gathered up then. And she did one of those, like, hip shots where she cracked it, and from underneath she went bap, just like hit her in the jaw, and you just watch her whole fucking neck just snap around where she's just like not expecting to get fucking cold cocked.
Wow.
In the middle of the highway. Yeah,
falling like Nate Robinson did.
That was a nice brutal shot.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, thankfully, Sabine wasn't hit again by another car. But when a police officer tried chasing after, Sabina settled into a full combat pose, bouncing around like she was in the middle of a boxing match, instead of the active motorway where she was then standing.
Ready to square and circle, bitch!
Whoa!
Now remember, most cops in the UK are not armed. Because had this happened in America, there is no doubt that guns would have been drawn the moment Sabina struck an officer, if not before.
They mostly kick when they have to. Why? What is happening
Let's
here?
Let's just stop the
Let's
show.
Let's just done. Mm-mm. Done with it. Wow.
But since
but yes, to that point, cops would have shot her 19 times.
Oh, yeah. This is
she
also
would have let out on the fucking highway. Yes.
Yeah.
This is one time that I would actually say it would have been really good for them to have tasers. At least
be a taser. We can compromise with a taser.
But since this was the UK and their cops rely more on hand-to-hand combat, citizens in their car on the motorway had to get out to assist in the arrest of Sabina Erickson, because the two cops attempting to do so just weren't cutting it. It took 6 people to take Sabina Erickson down, including 2 grown men that Sabina was waving around like fucking ragdolls.
It is
wild to see the strength at which Sabina fought everybody. Like, they could not get her. She was snapping right. like a fucking boa constrictor. Like, she was doing the full body waves like fucking gators do. And mm-hmm. they had her by the arms, but it took all of these, I mean, you know, and it was a lot of Big Apple. There's a lot of big Adam's apples going on. There was a sure. lot of weak bones. It is the UK. And right. so you do see them kind of struggling a little bit. They do need, they are a little anemic.
Well, absolutely. I mean, honestly, this all could have been solved with one redneck. Like, if one just American redneck showed up, just be like, I got the lasso. Like, they are good for something.
No, rugby people over there are big.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And just because we're a skinny people doesn't mean we're fucking weak. I'm strong and skinny.
No, I mean, by definition, it would mean that you were weaker than someone
who
wasn't.
No, we're wiry. We're wiry people.
What would you do
to Sabina? Seemingly skinny, but very strong.
How would you pin Sabina?
I wouldn't. It would take five other of me to do it.
I say it's better to do it the old-fashioned way. Give her, take her on the town and explain to her about jazz.
So you're so lonely that you're going to take this opportunity to hit on this woman who's having a mental breakdown in the middle of the highway. Okay.
Well, once they got her zip-tied on the ground, she started screaming for someone to call the police and eventually settled into screaming, fuck you, over and over and over again, as is evidenced by this clip from traffic cops that eventually made it to air.
We hold it.
No, let go!
Why do you let me stand, Robert? Why do you do this? Why do you do it? Why?
Watch it, I still love you.
Why?
Go, get that.
Roll her forwards.
Go on.
Oh, that.
Roll her over.
Fuck you, guys! Fuck you! Fuck
off! I'm going to carry you as we are.
Yep. Help me!
It is still too civil for American cops. That would be on the chopping floor. They would be like, that's not enough. Is there another llama that's escaped from the zoo that we could put in this segment?
Finally, paramedics arrived and sedated her on the scene, which was the only way anyone was getting Sabina off the motorway. Mysteriously, when they checked the sisters' bags, they found that they were carrying multiple cell phones, a laptop, and only one passport.
That's the other weird that they try to point towards, that there was some kind of, they were involved in some kind of bullshit because of the multiple cell phones and all of the technology that they were carrying, like all of the, but I mean, it means nothing.
Did any of it work or connect?
They just left it all behind.
Okay.
Now, after the incident on the highway, both sisters were taken to the hospital. While both of Ursula's legs were crushed, Sabina seemed to be just fine, despite the fact that she'd been grazed by one car and full-on hit by another.
Jeez.
Can you imagine if you and your brother decided to just fucking go ape shit? Like, you and Charlie, Marcus, just decided to go fucking
ape shit
in the highway.
Don't even say that.
But then, like, you know, you're fine. No, Charlie's, like, hurt in the hospital, but you're fine. And then that first moment when you see each other and go, like, hell yeah, bro. Fucking stick it to the cops. You know, you just fucking do that fucking Lord of the Rings, like handshake each other and you grab each other by the forearms. That'd be cool as hell.
I'm scared of Charlie. Charlie used to hate me, but now he can stand me.
Which that's a big get.
Yeah, it's a pretty good thing.
Well, after Sabina was checked out and blood was drawn, she was taken. No, that's Thomas. Charlie's always
Thomas,
loved you.
Charlie. Oh, Thomas. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll still.
Well, fuck him.
No, don't.
No, I'm just joking, Thomas. I'm just joking, Thomas.
No, no, no.
Thomas, I love you. God, you're my favorite. You're my favorite Parks.
Wow.
Well, wow. That's amazing how you flipped like that from me
so
to my
fast.
Brother. Just for out of fear.
I wish you were Thomas.
Well, after Sabina was checked out and blood was drawn, she was taken to the police station on charges of assaulting a police officer and trespassing on the motorway. And Sabina Erickson was booked. Now, as I'm sure many of you are guessing, British police assumed that this whole incident was the result of a drug trip gone bad. Probably PCP or something similar.
Yeah.
But when both women were tested for narcotics, they were 100% clean, and no drugs were in their possession.
Yeah,
it makes it so much scarier. It's the same thing that we learned with the guy in Miami that ate the other dude's face.
Oh,
and they said there was the toxicology report came back as negative. That makes
it so
horrifying.
That was just an idea
horrifying.
On a Wednesday. That was just a normal, like, came up with that on the fly. Like, you said, you know, actually, after I eat that guy's face, I should make a pine cone Christmas tree.
Why not?
God, erratic that's behavior. Horrifying.
Yeah.
Furthermore, Sabina seemed completely normal at booking and was even kind of flirty with the officers.
Yeah, she was kind of fun.
Yeah. She did, however, make a cryptic comment. She said, quote,
"We say in Sweden that an accident rarely comes alone. Usually at least one more follows, maybe two."
That's scary.
Yeah. Now, naturally, one might think that a rigorous mental health check was in order here. And one of the myths of this story is that Sabina Erickson was given no checks whatsoever. People say that in the press over and over again. She actually was, but perhaps wasn't given as many checks as she should have.
Oh.
It's hard because it seems that when the bubble was popped and her sister were no longer together, she kind of became normal in a way, because she was kind of away from the pull of her sister's, whatever it was that was getting her in there.
Yeah.
But then I start to think, well, this also is a weird tactic, because it kind of continues to feed into the delusion that she can't let the cops know what's really going on, because if they did, they would steal her organs.
Yeah, and remember, you know, from the incident on the motorway, like, especially if you watch the footage, like, they go from calmly talking, you know, they've got one elbow resting on their hand, they've got their cigarette up next to their face,
they're very European. Calmly,
very, very European, and then 5 seconds later, they're bolting into traffic and screaming and spitting at officers. It just fucking, it goes from calmness to aggression on fucking dime.
Love a passionate woman.
Well, the producer of this damn traffic cop show is definitely happy as hell.
Yeah, because the rest of this is all just about how, oh no, there's a goose on the parking lot. There's a carriage of milk that was left out by the whiskey mills.
That's horrible.
You got to watch some traffic cops, man. I was watching some of it earlier today, and it's fucking intense.
Really?
It's crazy.
Good. I'll watch it.
I'm going to do
a
Marcus.
The British are a highly violent people.
Cool.
I'm going to do a Marcus Parks theme Sunday. I'm going to listen to Hot Pipes. Going to get my organ music in, and then I'll watch my British shows, and I will eat a meat pie in your honor, good sir.
Hell yeah. You know what? I think you're going to come out of that Sunday feeling like $100.
Uh-huh. And then they'll show up here, and I'll be pulling teeth out of my skull, and I'll be like, oh yes, I'm British.
I've only lost 3 teeth.
Not bad. I mean, you're not a toddler, so you don't get like an applause or anything, but
remember before the show we were talking about the chili eating competition, and there was that one woman that couldn't compete at the end because she couldn't eat fast enough because she had British teeth and they were like sideways and she couldn't chew, and she blamed it all on her British teeth because she said she couldn't chew the peppers fast enough.
Just quick side note, if you do want to go down the chili rabbit hole, Netflix has a great series on the chili competition.
We are the champions.
The Carolina Reaper is the weakest of all the peppers that these people eat, and it goes crazy. So yes, enjoy that.
Well, Sabina Erickson was seen on 4 separate occasions during her day in booking. She was seen by a police surgeon, a consultant psychiatrist, and a suitably qualified social worker. All of them were satisfied that there was no sign of immediate psychological illness. That said, they had no access to the footage of what happened on the motorway because the crew from traffic cops had already gone home, completely satisfied that they'd captured the most insane goddamn thing reality TV had ever seen.
Oh yeah, dude, it was what a good get.
But with zero concern of the footage itself, well, don't they think the cops should have had that?
Well, it was before. I mean, you know, no, this it's was TV. Like, yeah. TV, no, TV gets it first.
Okay,
then they give it to evidence if they want to.
I see. All right.
Also, yeah, reality show producers also aren't necessarily known for their fucking ethics.
Yeah. That's true.
They were arrested, quote unquote arrested, under a thing called the 1983 Mental Health Act, which is this idea that then you're kind of allowed to the get to put you in safety. I think we in America, we have a thing called the Baker Act that used to be, I don't know if it's a thing anymore.
Well, that's a Florida thing.
Yeah, where you can Baker Act somebody in Florida, where you can kind of, you can put them into a mental health facility against their will for their betterment, right? This idea that you can call the police and do this. And they were arrested kind of underneath this umbrella. So they were treated, you know, in the UK, they do this thing where, like, I honestly, we think that they're told they're fucking rubes for. They have this thing called, like, kindness. And there's a thing called, like, kindness. Trying to, like, create a sense of rehabilitation.
Well, why would you just put them in prison for a long time?
No, they don't understand. That's how it's done. You got to make them worse. Huh.
But they were very, they were trying to be kind of lenient with them and saying that they were in an episode of some kind of mental illness. As soon as the blood reports came back, said they did not have drugs in their system.
Right.
Like, oh, obviously they're a couple of bags short of a fucking English lunch. So now we have to like treat them different.
Can't just make up cliches.
That's what I did.
Well, the people examining them, instead of seeing the whole picture, they were given a very narrow set of legal questions with which to ascertain Sabina's condition. Those questions were, is the person fit to be interviewed? Is the person fit to be charged? And is the person fit to be taken to court? And since Sabina had calmed down considerably, the answer to all three questions was yes. So the next day, she was interviewed, charged with her crimes, taken to court, and sentenced to one day in jail, which she had already served. So it's
one day in
get
jail.
Out of here.
Yeah, one buddy. Day in jail is something that we do not even have close to an option of.
I mean, no. When you're drunk and when you're driving around in Wisconsin.
Oh, they'll put you away for much longer than one day.
But if they know you.
Assaulting a police officer, she would have been denied bail.
She would have been sentenced to 25 to life.
Oh, yeah. She punched Auntie Rita so hard, it snapped her fucking big old British head around.
Aw.
Now, there are a couple of possible reasons why Sabina Erickson appeared like she just had a moment on the motorway. Because, as one police officer put it, being odd isn't a crime with which one can be charged.
But it was the punching of the officer.
Also, being an odd isn't a crime with one can't be charged is actually the tagline for my new show, Weirdo in the Neighborhood.
Oh, you can't be charged, by the way.
Well, I play the naked mailman.
Yeah, you can definitely be charged for delivering that package.
Well, firstly, examiners in these situations effectively have only a snapshot of the patient. And in those snapshots, madness like Sabina's can be missed. Secondly, Sabina was sedated at the scene. And while sedation doesn't cure psychosis, it certainly takes off the edge.
They legitimately had to drug her like she was a water buffalo that they were taking into the zoo. They put her, because that's how my dad, but you know, back in the day, that's how they used to do it. My dad said when somebody used to get really wild and woolly back in the day, the main thing to really calm them down is that you used to put anklets on them and you put them in a big burlap sack.
That's what you're doing. You that's put what we do, van, yeah. Right?
You put them in a van and you let them chill out and have a nap in that little bag.
Suffocate right to death, perhaps.
Not all the time. They open it up. They give you a little snorkel.
Nice.
I'm not certain if they do that.
No.
But for her, they laid her down in a tarp, and then they had to drop a line in her just to knock her completely out, just to put her in the car to transport her.
Wow.
Because they take you to a place of safety for a mental health call.
Perhaps the biggest reason, though, is that Sabina was, again, most likely paranoid about the people examining her. And in her state of mind, she wouldn't have shared her paranoid beliefs with the people that might be in on it, whatever it was. So, the day after the madness on the motorway, Sabina was released out into the streets of an English city called Stoke-on-Trent, wearing her sister's green jacket and carrying £1,000 in cash and a laptop in a green plastic bag.
I think the cops did a massive disservice to that community.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Maybe I would have put an alert out and be like, crazy bitch, coming your way. Crazy bitch, coming your way.
Send her to a mental health facility. Ding, ding. Yeah.
Put a big bell on her.
Yeah, just something to let the community know that, also, things are going to get shaken up around here.
Stoke-on-Trent wasn't actually even just famous for this story. They're actually famous for a film that a documentary shot there called Stroke-on-Trent, involves a whole community.
So you got bored reading the book. Is that what you're telling us?
Well, Sabina had no idea where she was or any idea where she was going. But most interestingly, she hadn't once asked anyone in the hospital or anyone at the police station about her sister, Ursula.
In my mind, she's being conspiratorially quiet. Like, she doesn't want them to even think about her sister. She's not trying to implicate her sister in anything that's going on, knowing that wherever they're going to go, they're going to link back up after this.
Right.
Sabina simply wandered the streets of Stoke-on-Trent alone, possibly looking for the hospital, possibly just lost in a haze of psychosis. At 7 p.m., though, she came upon two local men who were out walking a dog. One of these men was 54-year-old Glenn Hollinshead, a self-employed welder, paramedic, and former Royal Air Force captain who is said to be, by all who knew him, a kind, generous, and helpful individual to anyone who needed it.
it seems to be like the picture of the nice man from an English town that is genuinely just believes that everyone is good.
Yes. I also love the duality of a welder and a paramedic, where it's like, we will make sure your bones stay together. You won't be able to move very well.
No, but I'll make you the Tin Man, but an alive Tin Man.
Absolutely.
Now, when Sabina commented on Glenn's dog, he and his friend Peter Malloy stopped and started a conversation. Sabina asked if there was a good bed and breakfast nearby, and when she was informed that there wasn't, Glenn offered his own place instead. No. It's just the kind of guy he was.
Oh, yeah. He's too nice.
Now, Peter was immediately put off by Sabina, whom he said was acting nervous, constantly looking over her shoulder.
Yeah, it's just a random woman you're meeting from the highway that has a laptop in a bag that she's like dirty from sleeping in a police station. You might be good to be a little bit suspicious.
Yeah.
But when Glenn offered her a bed, she relaxed, and all three walked back to Glenn's house. Sabina did mention on the walk back that she was trying to locate her sister in the hospital, but she neglected to mention anything about what had transpired the day before, and neither Glenn nor Peter could pry out any details.
And the turnaround for traffic cops, like, they couldn't watch that show that night, right?
Oh, no, they got to edit it.
They had to edit it, yeah. So they didn't know. That would be so freaking scary.
Oh, yeah.
Once they got back to Glenn's, the three of them started drinking. And while Sabina seemed open and warm most of the time, she'd grow cold if they asked her about her sister or what she was doing in England. She also wouldn't stop peering out of the window from behind the curtains. And at one point, she gave Peter and Glenn cigarettes before snatching them away again, telling the men that the cigarettes might have been poisoned.
Well, again, it's a cigarette.
Which didn't really make any sense because she was smoking from that pack that whole night.
It just seems like Swedish flirting.
Maybe. And cigarettes are poisoned.
Mm-hmm. They
every
are.
Cigarette they are. Is poisoned. It Take is it true. From me. I drink a bottle of whiskey a night.
Hey, baby.
And I will tell you one thing. More cigarettes are poisoned.
That's medicine.
Now, I don't Peter, drink a bottle of whiskey a night. And if you're doing that, please seek help.
Yes. Now, Peter was very good. Now, Peter was completely unnerved by the whole situation, but Glenn dismissed Sabina's behavior as just quirky, and he even seemed to like it a little. Mm. But because Peter was uncomfortable, he just kind of left at midnight. Now, Sabina stayed the night without incident, and the next day, at Sabina's request, Glenn called his brother, who worked at a local hospital, to see if they could find Ursula. From what his brother said, Glenn was calm, and Sabina was talking in the background. At this point, Glenn's just thinking this woman's a little weird, but I'm going to help her out. And all that day, Glenn and Sabina just sort of hung around the house. And we have absolutely no idea what they did.
I don't know.
Okay.
All
Maybe
we know,
did some welding. I don't know.
All we know is that at 7:40 p.m., Glenn happily went next door to borrow some tea bags from his neighbor, a man named Frank Booth.
Coincidence?
Glenn returned home with the tea bags in tow, but only minutes later, he staggered back outside, bleeding from his stomach, saying that Sabina had stabbed him. He collapsed to the ground, and his last words to Frank Booth were instructions to look after Glenn's dog. Aww. Sabina had sunk a kitchen knife into his stomach 5 times, and to this day, nobody knows why.
Ooh, mama.
While Frank Booth called 999, Sabina took off, inexplicably grabbing a small rubber mallet and stuffing a piece of roofing tile in her pocket on the way out the door.
This sounds like me playing Disco Elysium.
Yeah, those are very strange objects to grab.
She then wandered Glenn's neighborhood, thwacking herself in the head with the mallet until her hair was matted with blood.
That scares the shit out of me.
Yeah. You do kind of have to think Looney Tunes, though. Get those little bumps up, push the bump up, bump bump goes up to the other side of the head.
CCTV footage shows her looking confused and distressed, almost like she's looking for something, but doesn't know what she's looking for. She's had a full psychotic break. Wow. Eventually, a passing motorist pulled over and tried taking the mallet out of her hands. And when he tried to do so, she made noises of primitive rage and smashed the Good Samaritan in the head with the roof tile that she'd stashed in her pocket.
Man, you didn't even know that shit's coming out. It's like fucking Bugs Bunny, the Looney Tunes again. Just like, bleep, secondary weapon equipped. Whip, whip, whip.
Did not expect that. Wow.
Paramedics soon spotted Sabina, but when they gave chase, she dashed to a nearby bridge. And rather than being taken alive, she jumped 40 feet down into the A50 highway. But again, miraculously, Sabina's attempt to kill herself to escape capture failed, and she was found down below with two broken ankles and a fractured skull.
Is she the freaking alien that starts out in the Men in Black movie that Will Smith is chasing?
Seriously, it sounds like the T-1000.
This whole thing is Species.
What the hell? It's wild, dude. She really tried it. And then I wonder, because I know that, like, psychotic breaks does involve, like, you can have adrenaline rush. It's kind of like having like being on PCP, where these things can happen, where you kind of can act in superhuman ways. But also the suicide attempt was like flip it. Like it was the cops were coming and she kind of just like randomly chose this idea of jumping off the bridge. And I don't think
this was a suicide attempt.
I actually don't know if it was a suicide attempt. I think it was just fucking this flea response that comes out of this syndrome where she just needed to get away from anybody she viewed as someone that was attacking her, this very acute paranoid breakdown, and just decided that it's like when people just jump out of a window in a horror movie.
I'm starting to think they should have just shot her on the highway. Maybe the American cops are right in the long run.
Well, I think it was a suicide attempt because on the highway, you know, they could have, if they were just trying to escape, they very easily could have just run off into the woods. But instead, they ran into traffic.
Yeah.
Where the danger was. And this is the same thing. Like, I think there is something about, like, they would rather die than be captured because their delusion has told them that what happens after they're captured is going to be worse than death.
Damn.
So Sabina was charged with murder, but every single question investigators asked was met with two infuriating little words. No comment. Over and over again. No comment. No comment. No comment. Meanwhile, Ursula had been released from the hospital herself.
Uh-oh.
But instead of supporting her sister, Ursula just hauled ass out of England. She spent some time in Sweden, but eventually settled in Bellevue, Washington, where she apparently still lives to this day.
Yeah, she's apparently a quiet member of a local church and just lives her life.
Yeah, quiet member of a Catholic church. Catholic Church claimed on their website in 2011 that Ursula had received the rites of scrutiny that supposedly delivered her from, quote, emptiness, illusions, and death-prone effects of evil.
All right, well, it's interesting she did end up at a Bellevue. I was thinking it was more the hospital, but okay.
What are the rites of scrutiny?
I don't know. I tried to look up the rites of scrutiny, but I couldn't find what the rites of scrutiny are.
Because there are many people.
Well, one of the dumber theories about this is that the Erickson sisters were possessed by demons.
That is very common in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, most of the other smaller cases that I was reading about in the various blurbs, the psychiatry article blurbs I was reading, is that it's often a religious phenomenon more often than not. So who knows?
Now, Sabina's trial was, to say the least, odd. Even though she was still saying no comment to every question asked, she pled guilty to manslaughter by reason of diminished responsibility. She admitted that she stabbed Glenn 5 times, but couldn't provide a reason why. And interestingly, both the prosecution and the defense argued the same thing, that Sabina was insane at the time of the killing, but sane at the time of the trial.
Hey, but it's good to get sane at some point, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
However, while they agreed on this view, they disagreed somewhat on the prognosis. The defense argued for folie à deux. Folie à deux. One more. Folie à deux.
The more you do it, the worse it's becoming, actually. It's really bizarre.
Yeah, before any of you fucking people start ripping me apart, I practiced.
We're Ben and Henry. We are Ben and Henry.
We are with you. We're with you because I hear it's the all the time. But what are you going to do? All right? We're not Frenchies.
No. The French, great people.
Yeah. Well, they said, the defense said, that there had been a psychological blurring between Ursula, the primary, and Sabina, the secondary, which diminished her responsibility.
But they spent that whole time apart.
Yeah.
Right.
The prosecution. But they said it was residual. The murder had happened. She was still in the throes of the madness for two when she killed Glenn Hollinshead.
She was in reruns by the time she was out stabbing Glenn.
She was in syndication, yes. Yeah.
The prosecution, on the other hand, argued another French term. They said it was bouffée de la rente.
Yeah, this bouffe de la rente. It's like, that's fucking, these French criminologists come up with really fun, like, unique ways, because it sounds like a pastry, but it's about murder.
It does sound like a, even the English translation sounds like a pastry. Mm. A puff of madness.
Whoa!
I wish that would be the nice, that'd be a good challenge in Great British Bake Off, where you could go and you make a puff of madness, and sometimes it has berries in it, and sometimes it has, is this a bullet?
Whoa, that's the madness.
It's a puff of madness.
Woo!
Very difficult.
Well, in this, a person with no previous mental issues has a psychological break that lasts for a couple of weeks, but the person is not a long-term sufferer of mental illness, hence a puff of madness.
You guys
save both of these things. These are important for the three of us, right? Is that these are terms that we need to remember and hold into our minds and save for a very opportune time when we are going to need to say, it was just a puff of madness.
It was a puff of madness.
Very quickly. If we can get 2 weeks of crazy, I'll take it.
Absolutely.
Sorry, we can't do it. All three of us have been diagnosed with actual mental illness, so therefore we cannot be sufferers of puffs of madness.
We can only be sufferers
of our existing mental illnesses.
And I don't believe that any of us are mentally ill. I think society has changed in a way that's not conducive with how humans should be.
We just simply
have to fit into a mold that we should not be in.
Maybe
that's
insanity.
Not true.
Well, yes, absolutely. Computers, we're not supposed to sit in computers our entire life. That's that you don't have ADD. You're not supposed to be there.
No, you're saying, well, technically, if you're in, according to that logic, we're supposed to like die in war when we're 18.
Yes.
Also, my grandmother had no access to computers, and yet bipolar disorder was still very much a problem.
Day and night. Good and bad.
Well, in other words, it seems like that the prosecution and the defense were pretty much just arguing the same thing. So the court accepted the plea. In sentencing, the judge said that while he knew a light sentence would do nothing for the suffering of Glenn Hollingshead's family, a heavy sentence wouldn't accomplish much either. So Sabina Erickson was sentenced to 5 years in prison, served two, and was released in 2011. It is believed that she is reunited with her husband and children and now lives in Norway.
Nice.
Again, this is where we need to have a little bit of middle ground, because I do think a longer sentence might have helped when it comes to like society and making sure no one else was stabbed.
But hey, because
it wouldn't prevent anything.
No. I mean,
I think she's going to have another psychological break, and we're going to be covering this in 15 years when we're still doing this show.
No way.
So are you saying she needs to be put away in a mental hospital for the rest of her life?
I think she probably could have done another year and a half.
It's already been now close to 10 years since she's been released, and she hasn't done anything crazy since, so I'm certain it's done.
Must have been a fun day for her husband to be like, all right, mom's coming home. Do we hide the knives?
According to her biological son, Simon, in his MySpace page, the family, this is all in the book because they reference his MySpace page all the time. In the family, they call this the car accident that they were involved in. And they say that his Aunt Ursula and his mom were in a car accident that got out of hand.
Well, it was but they are really going over something big there.
We'll see, because according to his MySpace page, she is not guilty of a single crime.
She's not guilty of anything. There is
a massive conspiracy happening.
Right. Wow. Well, the thing is about a puff of madness is that a third of the people who go through it
that's a queef of sadness.
A third of the people who go through these puffs have a relapse. And if Sabina gets back in touch with her sister, then there is a chance that a repeat of the madness of two could occur. So you just kind of keep them separate.
Well, you just proved my point. So
that doesn't prove your point at all.
It's very possible she could snap at any time.
So you think that putting her in prison for another year and a half would prevent her?
No, they don't do prison. They have mental health facilities.
Don't they have ranches where people can go and run out their crazy?
Maybe at the very least, can we all agree she should just meet with a therapist once a week?
I think she probably does.
That's all I'm saying. I don't know if she does.
She might help to have some kind of running coach or something.
Yeah,
she's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
However, there are some who believe that this was not merely a puff of madness, nor Was it Julia Du?
Well, now, I'll actually subscribe to the belief.
What could it be?
It was not Julia Du.
Really?
In fact, there are some who believe that this was not even a matter of psychosis in any way whatsoever.
Get the case out. I want to open it up again. Whoa. And then I want to close it.
Wow.
What they believe is that the Erickson sisters were activated MKUltra agents who had escaped from an underground Monarch mannequin lab. Because remember, yep, they were so worried about their organs being stolen, which is exactly what a generated life form, or GLF, would be worried about.
They are clones.
Oh.
Furthermore, in the event that one of these life forms were to be captured, their program behavior is to self-terminate, which is why the sisters ran into traffic and why Sabina tried jumping off the bridge.
Manchurian candidates, do not rip this tag off this mattress.
Don't do that.
It is also telling that Sabina Erickson killed a man who was former Royal Air Force, and it's likely that these people say that Sabina Erickson either killed him because of her shoddy treatment at the hands of the military or out of fear that he'd report her escape.
Follow the money, see who benefits. Royal Air Force, more like Boyle Air Force.
There's not a lot of money involved, I don't think here, but...
You also see signs of these women possibly being artificially created beings. Robots, for lack of a better word.
Androids, for a more appropriate term, Marcus. I'm sorry to correct you.
Where you see this in the immense strength that they showed while cops attempted to capture them. And you see it in their seeming inability to die.
Bionic Swedes coming to our highways, making it difficult to get to work.
And while you might say, oh, if these women were escape MKUltra agents, then why is all this allowed on television? I'd say to you that it is merely a demonstration of power by their controllers. And this demonstration might even have been the point of the entire incident.
The power of the Puppet Masters is so complete and totally all-encompassing that they will show you the strings purposely so that you know there is in fact a stage in which you were dancing upon.
As a very urgent email to the BBC said, imagine a massive army of these women able to survive serious injuries and still fight programmable blonde Terminators who are unstoppable and unkillable.
I'm hard as hell thinking about it, and I love every minute of it.
That's just fembots from Austin Powers.
In the words of the email, I suggest you wake up on this big time.
Yeah, set the alarm, buddy. It's morning.
We need to investigate, and if there's anyone listening who works for the BBC, we join this email author's constant urging to investigate what could be the end of civilization as we know it.
We can't let the blondes win. We beat them in 1945,
yeah,
and we gotta beat them again.
So you're saying they should still be in jail? Is that what's going on?
No, we're saying that they should still be in the underground labs.
Yeah, they're clones. They're robot clones.
Honestly, isn't that what kind of Us is kind of about, that, isn't it? The movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah.
A little bit.
Well, kinda, we learned a lot today.
Awesome. I loved it. Wow, the sisters Erickson. It's just nice to have family. And I think that's really what this was all about. Indeed.
Well, if you can't commit a series of crimes outside of your family, it's nice to bring it home. Because, again, we're all in quarantine. And this is a perfect time to plot a very articulated and almost undescribable level of conspiracy that you are involved of is in a family. This is ripe for it. And I say this Christmas is the time for your family to plan their assault on the neighborhood.
I don't know if that's necessarily a good idea.
It's the season for plotting. This is the season for plotting.
If assault, you mean do some Christmas caroling from a nice distance.
You said I couldn't do my Christmas caroling.
You're not allowed to do Christmas caroling because you're oh no, you have evil intention.
Do you ever think that you and Carolina could go so desperately mad that you'd commit a series of crimes together, or is your love not strong enough, Marcus?
A series of crimes. Let me put that back on you. Do you think you and Natalie could commit a series of crimes?
They can't even go hiking.
We got to renew our vows at some point.
No, honestly, you and Carolina are the only two physically fit as a duo enough to commit a series of crimes, Marcus.
Yeah, both of us together. Yeah, that is true. I mean, we can run, we can hike, we can hide, and we own a Subaru Outback, which means that we can escape. We can probably escape under the radar just a tiny bit. No one's paying attention to a Subaru Outback. Nobody thinks that the guy in the Subaru Outback is committing any crimes. You know why?
Because
the Subaru Outback is a sensible car for a sensible person.
But sometimes the world drives sensible people to do insensible things.
Absolutely. Good grief. All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. A wonderful little story that
we did it again, and we are coming back. We're coming back hard this year because it's Christmas, and that means, it, you know, It sucks. But we got different, we got some great shit coming down the pipe.
Christmas is kind of nice.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But we're going to be taking, we might be taking a quick visit to Old West. And also, next week, we've got a big old Mama Jama cult that we're going to be covering. Very excited. It's been okay. It's been in the old box for a long time. And then we're going to cover a person that I've been excited to cover for years.
Uh-oh.
And we're getting deep down into the gluteal cleft of that story very, very soon.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
A lot of good shit coming down the pipe.
Yep, it's a return to a subject that we covered many, 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 many years ago, but another one of those that we covered when we had no idea what we were doing. So
absolutely,
we're going to be covering it in full, giving it the proper treatment.
So yeah. I hope all of you are ready for another series on 9/11. How fun is that one?
Yay! The episode, the series that broke me!
Yay!
They should not, okay, well, just wonderful things here, folks. We
really
are all doing
stuff.
Very good.
Check out Last Podcast merch for all of your merch needs this Christmas. Try to put clothes on your family.
Yeah!
I guess you can do it with us.
And honestly, absolutely, yep. Have a nice time with your family. And remember, I'm actually, because, you know, the vaccine and stuff like that is coming out now that we want to talk about it too much. But I'm starting to just lean in. Let's enjoy it while we can, because we're going to get busy again, people.
We're
gonna
get very busy.
It's going to happen, I promise you. So let's, I don't know. We've made it this freaking far. So let's just lean in and we'll enjoy ourselves for now and then. And
soft pants,
soft
can't
pants.
Lose.
And we hope everyone is doing as well as they can out there in these unbelievably difficult times, especially if you have a business or if you're in the service industry. You know, we
I
think about you all the
right
time.
Now. Yeah, yeah. So
and, just everybody suffering out there. It's a brutal, brutal time.
We're going to do our best.
But nice thing is the wealthy people are getting more money.
That's always nice.
So that's very nice.
Yeah,
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Again.
Magustalations.
Hail me, you're a bitch. Yeah, come on.
Sounds like you're already out west.
Help me up. There's bitches up in on hills.
Why did you become this person?
I don't know.
Okay.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.